welcome to this very special live edition of the Making Sense podcast, What Actually Matters for Your Money in 2026. Now look, 2025, it was a wild time. So what does 2026 have in store for us? How do we take the best information and use it to prepare our money strategies so that we can use the best tactics to get ourselves further ahead this year? That's what we're going to be diving into today. And not only what is happening and what you need to know, but what you can do about it. I'm talking everything from investing, saving, property, even the political changes that are afoot. We're jumping into all of this. We are leaving no stone unturned. Don't forget, you can drop your questions in. That's why we're live, so that we can have a really good chat, get all of those burning questions answered. So sound off in the comments. Let's talk about it. And I'm loving it. I'm seeing so many people from all over the country in the chat. Tamaki Makoto, Hamilton. Oh, we've got another person dropping in from Banff, Canada. And Christchurch, North Shore, Auckland, Selwyn, Wanaka, Whangarei, Tauranga. Love it. Oh, a fellow person from Te Awamutu. Hi, Michaela. You're in the best part of the country there. All right, so that's great. We're going to have a good chat and we're going to dive into it. Now, don't forget, hit subscribe while you're here so that if you have to dash off for whatever reason, you can come right back really easily. Watch the replay whenever works for you. Now, before we get into this properly, quick disclaimer, this is important. This is not, cannot be, individual financial advice. Everything we talk about here is general information only. From there, you need to adapt it to your own individual financial situation. If you would like someone to give you individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet. I have a previous episode of the Making Sense podcast on how to find a good financial advisor for you. So just jump back into the archives, check that out if you need it. So, time to introduce our wonderful panel. Now, forgive me because I am technical producer as well as host. So sometimes we have some issues here. But first up, we have the wonderful Vanessa Williams. You already know her from our favorite episodes of the Making Sense podcast. She is our data queen. Vanessa can break down all of the wonderful info she gets from realestate.co.nz. She can read the tea leaves like no other. So thank you for joining us, Vanessa. Really appreciate that as always. We've also got Jason Walls, who is the current TVNZ business reporter, formerly, of course, News Talk ZB's political editor as well. So a wonderful man to be joining us to help us figure out what's going on in both the business world and the political world, very needed in an election year where we've got all of these promises flying around wildly. Can we trust any of them? Probably not, but Jason will tell us. And then, of course, we've got, last, never least, the wonderful Katie Wesney. She is head strategic coach for Enable Me, and she sees clients all day, every day, helps them figure out their money, so we get to pick her brains for free. So thank you so much. What a wonderful expert panel. I'm really excited to talk to you guys about what is going on in the money world. It's a lot, frankly. So let's jump right into it. Jason, I want to start with you because I think one of the big factors this year is it being an election year. That could mean new rules for our money. What sorts of areas are you keeping an eye on?
I would say, and thank you very much for having me. This, just honestly, and this is going to sound dumb, Making Sense. The name only just clicked for me when you said it out loud. So it's very clever. Well done. In terms of the things that I'll be keeping an eye on for when it comes to money is definitely KiwiSaver. I mean, it's a huge element and a big part of New Zealand's economic ethos. Everybody, or most people, have a KiwiSaver. And we've seen over the last few years how various different companies and fund managers have utilized KiwiSaver as a big old pot of money that they can not only do things with in New Zealand while growing your money, but looking overseas as well. So that's going to be a big one as to how the political parties use that information and that stockpile of money and in terms of any various different policy changes that they might have. I know, for example, the super fund, the government has already talked about when they're going to start drawing down on that and how that's going to affect the broader money markets. And to things like, you know, Kiwi Bank the government has been talking about how they're looking to give it a little bit more capital and how they can keep that sort of the New Zealand side to that, whether that be utilizing this pot of money that we have through KiwiSaver providers or whether it be through an IPO. That's something that I'll be definitely looking out for as well. But it doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum it is. I'll be watching it from all sides, the Greens, New Zealand First, National Labour. It's all really, really interesting. But when it comes down to it, I think KiwiSaver is definitely going to be the one to watch.
Yeah, and I think money is always an important part of elections, but I really think this year these money pressures are particularly front of mind. To my reading, it was very, very interesting that some of the first election promises, well, the first election promise, was on KiwiSaver. That to me was hugely indicative. Do you think there's anything that can sometimes get missed behind the headlines?
Well, it's an interesting question, the miss behind the headlines, because it really depends on, you know, what else is happening that day. If there is a big story overseas that overshadows the things here in New Zealand, often things can be not swept under the carpet, but not get the airtime that they probably would have on a bigger news day. And so I would always keep an eye out for, have a variety of news sources. For example, you know, always just a quick plug to the 6 o'clock news. That's one news, of course, but also the Herald and ZB and RNZ, the hourly updates really give you a good sense of what's going on. But yeah, when it comes to an election year, there are a lot of political promises. They come left, right, and center. And particularly around sort of July, August, and September, you get political announcements almost every single day. People get a little bit fatigued. So keep an eye on some of the trade websites as well. I know interest.co.nz and the National Business Review, they'll keep a very tight focus on those sort of the more money side of things.
Yeah, and they do a brilliant job breaking it down as well. I will say, you can also get, I will sometimes, if I'm getting overwhelmed, I just have the alerts on my phone. And you can change the alerts so that I will sometimes just be getting the business news. If I'm feeling overwhelmed, there's, you know, a missing child or something that I simply cannot handle emotionally, I'll just have the business news alerts coming through. And it's a good way to keep your focus on and make sure you don't miss anything. Katie, I think elections often mean uncertainty, and the money world doesn't really love uncertainty. What are you keeping an eye on this year? Do you think uncertainty will be a factor that you try to control for?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I'm watching how people react to uncertainty more than the uncertainty itself. I think markets have already priced in that it's an election year, but what kills people's wealth is when they panic pause their investing or shift to cash just until things settle down. That timing game almost never works out. And equally, I'm looking at KiwiSaver policy, any changes to contribution rates, employer contributions, withdrawal rules, I think will be huge. I think Vanessa will be watching this as well. Labour's capital gains tax proposal, if that kind of gains traction, because that might shift how people think about property shares. But uncertainty is always the backdrop, Francis. I think interest rates, global politics, elections, there's always something coming. And part of my job is to help clients build systems that work regardless, not trying to control for it. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. That does. What you're saying there about building systems for the uncertainty, I feel like that's really key in terms of, like, uncertainty is going to happen. Unexpected things are going to happen. Is there one main thing or a main strategy that often works to balance for that?
Definitely. For me, that's mean making sure you have a buffer, emergency savings, diversified investments, manageable debt, and that insulates you from whatever financial shocks come, whether from elections or anything else.
I think that's brilliant. All right, Vanessa, I feel like every time we talked last year, the big theme was the housing market being down. I can't count how many Ask the Experts I started with. Is it still a buyer's market? And you're like, yep. So there's talk that 2026 could see a recovery for property. What do you think? Are we getting a bit hopeful, or are there genuine signs on this?
Yeah, and hey, look, thank you so much and welcome to everybody for having me here again. Look, I think it's been, you're so right, 2024, 2025, they were such tough years in terms of the property market. And, you know, what I do say by that is a lot of people harped back to that beautiful month in January of 2022 when we were at the absolute peak of the market and everybody's thinking, oh my goodness, if you had a home, I'm so flush. Or, and I will comment on those who didn't have a home were going, I'm never actually going to get into a home. So we're sort of talking 60-30 there. About 60% of New Zealanders have some sort of property that they own and about 30% don't. So in that magic month of January 2022, when we saw that absolute peak and we saw that drop right off, we have seen it really stabilize during 23, 24 and 25 now. What does 26 look like? I mean, we have still got so much stock on the market. So that's usually a key indicator for me as to what's going to happen in terms of a recovery. And look, I mean, when you look at all of the commentary around house prices and what's actually going to happen, are we going to get back to that peak anytime soon? I mean, there has been a lot of legislative changes that have happened. We've still got a lot of uncertainty around what's happening with the shift in interest rates that happened last year. We saw them drop off quite quickly. And I know we'll get to it a bit later on, but what's that going to mean for inflation rates? Where are the unemployment rates going to end out? So I think what we are seeing is that there's a lot of economists who are talking about we're sort of building for a reduced confidence, and we're starting to really start to see some of those key metrics move. When that's going to happen, is it going to be next year? I think the jury's still out, because we have still got a whole bunch of houses that are sitting on the market, and we are in an election year, which Kiwis, as Katie said, as soon as there's a bit of uncertainty, we sit on our hands. And look, I don't blame Kiwis. With the property's one of the biggest purchases you're ever going to do, so you want to try and be as certain as you can do. But look, with all that property sitting around and also being in an uncertain year of an election year, I think that's what's really going to tell us whether we get back to that recovery or not. But there's certainly positive signs within the market.
Yeah, and I think the other part as well is how important, as you say, property is to New Zealand voters. I mean, whether you're a first home buyer or you have a house now, it's a huge part of people's financial lives. And so people really do vote on this issue. Do you think we've seen Labour, as Katie mentioned, announce that narrow capital gains tax? Are you keeping an eye out for any other areas where there might be election promises? Have you heard rumblings of anything? What are you thinking, Vanessa?
Yeah, I think the capital gains tax is a super interesting one. And I probably liken it to when we started in the 80s talking about bringing GST tax in. You know, it was sort of, oh my goodness, is it going to come in? No, we promise it's only ever going to stay at 3, 5, 10, you know, percent, whatever you want. It won't increase. And here we sit at 15% today. But look, I do think that should the Labour government be successful in the election and then introduce capital gains tax, it'll probably be something that we will live with for a long time. I mean, we never know, but I would imagine that, because you look at more mature economic climate countries around the world and you start to see that form part of their economic playbook. I am certainly watching out for it. Look, I think there'll be a lot of people who'll be relieved to see that the family home is exempt from that as well. And there is, I mean, the devil is also in the detail. We don't know all the details yet. What I have seen, if you look on the other side, National are looking at more of increasing that house supply. So they're sort of looking at how do we invest in growing the supply of houses. Now, both of those will have an impact on the market. The capital gains one, should that come in, I think it's touted to be coming into the market around July 2027. So what we perhaps will see is two things from that. One, a real increase in supply of those rental properties if investors are going, you know what, I want to get rid of that property before the tax comes in. So that will be great news for the first home buyers, because typically investors and first home buyers are purchasing similar types of stock. So that will be great for first home buyers, is a real injection of that supply within that market. But then on the other side of that, should the capital gains tax come in, I think what we might see is the prices lift a little bit for that type of stock, so that those investors can perhaps recover some of that tax implication of that for sale. But both of those are going to have an impact on the market. If you're going to really focus on investing and increasing supply like the National government are saying, that's going to have a longer term impact on the New Zealand property market, just because there'll be certainly more homes, which I put my hand up and say we absolutely need more homes here in New Zealand. So a bit of a longer play, whereas the capital gains tax will be a bit more of a shorter term injection into the property market.
Oh, fascinating. Great analysis there. Okay. Well, Jason, I think, you know, we're talking there about property potentially recovering. I mean, it's not the only area where there's talk of recovery. There is a lot of hope, a lot of signs. People keep talking about these green shoots, which is basically just there are signs that maybe we get this wider economic recovery in 2026. Now, I think a lot of people did get burned with the old survive to 25 mantra, which then didn't eventuate so much. 2025 was very hard for a lot of people. But there are genuine signs, I think, potentially of an economic recovery. What do you think, though? Are you seeing those signs? What sort of things are you looking at, and how hopeful are we? How far along the green shoot process?
Yeah, well, it started with survive till 25. And one economist tells me it's now looking for the fix in 2026 because they love a little rhyme. But it does seem like there are, and I think the phrase has now become so much of a cliche in economics, green shoots. But that's exactly what we're seeing. I mean, we had the economic data that came out at the end of last year that showed that there was a one heck of a rebound in the third quarter of last year. And of course, that was coming off a low base. I mean, the Trump tariffs had a major effect on New Zealand and what we were talking about before, the uncertainty element of it. I mean, New Zealand export rates to the US actually didn't change all that much. There wasn't a big economic hit. It was just the uncertainty about what was happening. Now, none of that is on the, well, I say none of that is on the horizon. Who knows what's on the horizon over there? But at this stage, we don't have anything so drastic to say that we're going to have to start really reining things in. But if you look at the spending data, you look at business confidence, we had consumer confidence that came out this morning, and all of these numbers are going up. I will say with a bit of a caveat that at the end of 2024, we were talking about the same numbers doing the same things. So there is always the scope for things to be reined back down. But the things that you can't disagree with is interest rates. And interest rates have been cut down to now, I think I could know the number off the top of my head, but about 2.25% is the OCR. I'm getting the thumbs up from Vanessa, so that's good. And retail interest rates have followed that back down. The one caveat is that banks are now looking forward and now seeing the very dovish statements from the Reserve Bank indicating that at one point they will be putting the OCR up. And banks have essentially read those tea leaves and say, well, okay, if you're already talking about putting rates up, we're going to put our long-term interest rates up as well. That kind of got met with a little bit of irk from the Reserve Bank governor. I had a sit-down interview with her where she talked about how that wasn't what the bank's forecast was. And the market was maybe being a little bit too binary in the sense that if rates are down now, it means at some point they have to go up in the future. And so she wasn't annoyed because she's very straight-laced, as all central bank governors have to be. But there was definitely an indication that banks were maybe reading a little bit too much into that.
Well, yes, there's so much talk about interest rates, and understandably so, because they're kind of the secret sauce that underlies everything with money, right? And we're used to it when, you know, savers get happy if interest rates go up. Borrowers, especially mortgage holders, not so happy. But it can also impact, you know, your investments. It impacts the share market. It can impact employment. So what was your reading of where things, bearing in mind, none of us have a crystal ball, but we make the best predictions we can off the information we have. What was your reading of what might happen, is likely to happen with interest rates this year?
I reckon they're on hold for the foreseeable. We get the Reserve Bank governor coming out in February, her first actual monetary policy statement where she is in charge. The last one happened just before Dr. Anna Bremen's tenure took over. But all the signs and all the indications point to things remaining on hold for a long period of time. The big caveat is that New Zealand is a small trading nation at the bottom of the world with a piddly old 5 million population. If something happens overseas, if the US sneezes, New Zealand catches the cold, is the old adage. So there is always that caveat. And that's why the Reserve Bank has in their forecast this sort of but wait sort of scenario. And that is always important. We do have 2.5%. So there is a buffer. If things really do turn to custard, we can cut further. But things would have to get pretty bad to see that happening. We do know that inflation is now in the target band for the Reserve Bank. In fact, if you are looking for the ideal conditions to take over as a Reserve Bank governor, you have them in New Zealand. So Dr. Anna Bremen, I like to call her New Zealand's second favorite Swedish import after IKEA, is really in her happy place right now.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Oh, God, didn't we see IKEA dominate the headlines when it arrived? We do get excited.
I didn't do any IKEA stories. It wasn't me. I did all the important stuff. So.
You're like, not guilty, not guilty. Oh, I love it. Hey, look, Katie, I mean, if we do see this recovery that we are hoping for and seeing signs of, if we see that happen, how would it impact investments? And I include KiwiSaver in that.
Yeah. And if we get a genuine economic recovery, and to me, that looks like lower unemployment, wages rising faster than inflation, and it, as Jason said, that business confidence up, that typically flows through to share markets and growth assets. Your growth and balanced KiwiSaver funds would likely do well because they hold shares in property. And I'd like to add, speaking of KiwiSaver, from April 1st, a reminder, contribution rates are going up from 3 to 3.5% for both employees and employers. You can opt to stay at 3, but I'd really encourage people to see this as automatic wealth building. The extra 0.5% from you plus your employer match means an extra 1% of your salary just going towards retirement without you having to make the decision. But here's what matters more, recovery. It honestly, it will not happen overnight and you can't time it perfectly. I feel like I'm a broken record, Francis, but the best position to be in is already invested when it arrives. I've seen so many people sit in conservative funds or cash waiting for confirmation of recovery, then miss the best gains because markets move before headlines catch up.
Well, exactly. I mean, even, you know, when we do see these recoveries, it can be really quick. It can be sometimes overnight.
So quick.
That you see the share market bounce.
Yeah.
Even if it's over a couple of days, sometimes if you're saying, oh, right, it's time, I'll put my money in now, it can take, depending on what platform you're using or broker or whoever, it can take 2, 3, 4 days for that buy order to trickle through and for you to actually hold it, by which point, again, you've missed it. I think people underestimate the times involved, right?
Yeah, I think so. And obviously this isn't individualized advice, but as a broad rule, if you have your home, you're under 50 and in a conservative KiwiSaver fund, recovery or not, you're likely leaving serious money on the table. So I really encourage you to look at that.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. This might already lead into what you've said. So do tell me if we're going to be retreading ground, but I want to give you the opportunity if there's something else you'd say on this, because I think when we're in this recovery soon, we hope, but it's not here yet phase, that can be a really great planning time and putting things into place.
Absolutely.
Also dangerous because the recovery isn't actually here yet. So you've got to kind of be careful, right? So are there mistakes people make or strategies that should be used?
Yeah. And I've been thinking about this, and probably the three biggest mistakes I see people repeatedly make is, one, waiting for the all clear signal. By the time recovery is obvious to everyone, markets have repriced, as we've just said. So just reiterating that, the best buying happens when it's uncertain and our brains are saying, wait. So that's really important to clock. And I think also, secondly, making changes based on what's happened, not what's coming. It's that classic when you see people, the markets fall and then people move to conservative funds and you just lock in a loss and it's heartbreaking, or kind of chasing last year's winners. You want to be positioned, and we always say this, for kind of the next 5 years, not reacting to the last kind of 6 months. And I think people also forget that you can actually do both. You know, keep your emergency fund in cash, 3 to 6 months of expenses. And I think that makes you braver to ride out uncertainty, but keep your long-term money invested, because that's the balance that lets you kind of sleep at night, but also build wealth.
I think the best bit of investment advice I ever got, Francis, was from you on Twitter. Just as COVID started, you said, right now your portfolio is like your face. Don't touch it. And I looked at that at the time because I had a bunch. I put all of my money into Invest Now and a bunch of funds, and I was so close to going and panicking and just taking it out because it had dropped by about $5,000 in about 3 or 4 days. But I was just like, nope, listen to Francis, and I left it. And because of you, I had a wedding. I put a down payment on a house. So thank you very much. I mean, that house has now lost more money than I could have ever imagined, but that's for another day.
On paper. Well, that's wonderful. There we go. And I will take that. That's absolutely brilliant to know that that was able to be a voice of calm during crazy times. I think I sent that tweet as I was running back from Argentina and trying to get through the rapidly closing airports. So there you go. Get you a girl who can do both. But that's absolutely brilliant. Vanessa, one of the things Jason mentioned earlier, you know, all this talk of, you know, interest rates and whether or not they go up, they hold steady. Also, there's economic recovery. All of this, of course, has the potential to hit house prices. If we split the housing market, I think the main categories to my mind are first home buyer, existing buyer, investors. Are there things that those three categories should be watching this year as they try to make smart decisions?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question because we do sort of have different behaviours perhaps when we are in those different sections of the market. So for our lovely first home buyers, again, I would be watching less so about the interest rates, but more to the point around the KiwiSaver piece and what's going to happen this year with the policies and sort of what's coming out from the government. Because at the moment, if you are a first home buyer, you have the ability to use that wonderful money for a house deposit. So again, it's about making sure that if that is something that you're planning on doing, perhaps just really keeping an eye on that piece, and that will help you to continue on that plan that we were talking about, that long-term plan. And should you start to see a lot of conversations around perhaps that changing or the ability to withdraw for a first home, that maybe you work with a financial advisor to go, okay, if this does change, what does this mean? What are my options now? So for our first home buyers, I'll be watching that. I mean, I think it is important, again, to work out your risk profile if you're a first home buyer, because if you're someone who really needs certainty, is on quite a fixed income and wants to make sure that they have the ability to buy and service that loan, then perhaps a five-year interest rate is for you, because you go, you know, actually for the next 5 years, we hunker down, we get on top of this, and I've got some certainty. So I think it's important to look at those. But again, you might be someone who's more willing to pay that 6 month, 1 year, 2 year. But again, I think that's understanding who you are as a person and then working with someone who's very educated in this space and utilizing their advice as well. I think your subsequent home buyers, again, it depends on what, and it's probably for all three, but what are your financial goals? What are you hoping to do? As a subsequent home buyer, you've probably done this before. You kind of understand a bit more of the market. You understand what it means when OCRs go up and go down and what happens to interest rates corresponding to those drops and increases. So probably, again, you've probably got you got your feet under the desk a bit. So again, maybe it's just time to check in with that financial advisor again to go, what are my options? I understand the concepts. I've been paying off my mortgage for a while now. If I want to move, what would this mean? What would that mean? And what to achieve my long-term goal? And investors, again, I go back to, it's probably the political landscape around what is going to be happening to those rules that impact the investor market. So are there going to be any changes again to the bright line test? That capital gains one's going to be a massive one to watch. Housing supply increases. What's going to be happening to perhaps loan to value ratios? So at the moment, it's pretty significantly around 40% that you need in order to get yourself an investment property. Are they going to soften that? Are they going to grow that? So just really keeping an eye on the LVRs or loan to value ratios, bright line test, interest deductibility. So I'd be really watching more so those that political capital gains tax, of course, or debt to income ratios as well could be the other thing that might change with in terms of policies that come out this year. So again, interest rates, what's your long-term plan? Work with a financial advisor on achieving that. But for me, in those three key areas, given it's election year, those are the areas that I would be watching to make sure that given the conversations that are having, can I still achieve my long-term financial goals?
Can Katie, we've got some people in the chat. And by the way, I would say to the people in the chat, loving that we've got a couple of people there who've said, oh, this is very reassuring that I'm doing the right thing with my KiwiSaver. So that's good. You have clearly been paying attention in past episodes of the podcast. We love that. If people do have any other questions as we are going at this point, drop them in. Let's weave them in as we go. Things that maybe aren't making sense as we're talking, or it's just, you know, sparking off an idea that you'd like to know more about. There are a couple of questions that are a little bit too close to personal financial advice, which unfortunately I can't get into, but always drop in the questions and I'll get to them if we can, right? So drop those in right now. Make sure we don't miss them. Now, Katie, one of the things that I am seeing coming up as a theme in the chat is opportunities versus scary spots. At a time like this, what do you think? Opportunity, scary spot?
Okay, so I think opportunity is always the same. Consistency beats timing. Okay, So I'm just re-emphasizing that. It's exactly what you're doing if you can contributing to KiwiSaver consistently. You know, that dollar cost averaging that we always talk about, Francis. It's boring. We appreciate that, but it's incredibly effective.
Boring work.
I think hacking. Yeah, it really does. And I think specific opportunity is check your KiwiSaver fund type. Honestly, Francis, so many people, I'm so happy that lots of people in the chat are saying that they're comfortable, but so many people are still in the default conservative funds, earning like 3-4% when they could handle growth funds, tracking closer to 8-10%. So again, leaving money on the table. If you ask me about scary spots, anything that promises quick returns or requires you to act now, crypto, forex trading. I think when economic uncertainty rises, so do the scams. So watch out for that. But honestly, I think often the scariest spot is doing nothing. Paralysis by analysis while inflation quietly eats into your cash savings. So be mindful, control your controllables, but really take action, seize opportunities.
Yes, I love that. I actually saw something really interesting, and this is a total sidetrack, but I saw some really interesting analysis the other day that the sort of rise in gambling, for starters, you know, you can literally gamble on what headline is coming next or how long a press conference will go for. That's insane. But, you know, the rise of gambling as investing too, going for some of these very high risk, very speculative assets, sort of comes about when there's more inequality and people feel like they need to sort of put it all on red. There's no chance for the getting ahead by the old ways. I understand that impulse, but at the same time, the old ways do work even when the headlines are screaming at you and it's all feeling a bit full on. I actually think the biggest thing that's changed is that sometimes we're maybe a bit too exposed to some of this news. We need to make sure we're focusing on the important things and not getting drowned by what can be noise. But on that, though, there is a huge amount happening in the global situation. I mean, Jason, we're looking at these really big developments between the US and Venezuela, potentially also Greenland. Who knows what's going on there? Ukraine and Gaza conflict rolling on. Do we see these things impacting New Zealand? And this could be politically or business money world.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because on paper, any of the things that you mentioned would have sent New Zealand markets into a tailspin maybe 10 years ago. But there is a certain amount of baked-in chaos that we've experienced these days, whereas we know that this the world is kind of getting quite unsettled and there are various different things going on. So the answer, and this is the journalist, is the worst answer in the world, but yes and no. Yes, in the sense that if something really comes back to impact New Zealand, such as the trade tariffs, that has a big impact on us. But on a wider sense of things, a new development, the Gaza, Ukraine, that would be a whole nother thing. In the Gaza, Israel and or Ukraine and Russia, or even Venezuela, US, those don't really seem to be impacting New Zealand markets or interest rate tracks as much because a lot of that has been baked in. So you need to look at things that specifically really impact New Zealand, things to do with trade. I mean, if China suddenly decided that they were changing their regulations in terms of where they're importing their dairy from, that would have a massive impact on New Zealand. So it's just about keeping an eye on what specifically mentions and affects New Zealand.
Yeah, I love that. And Katie, what do you think? When you're looking at some of these international instability moments. I mean, our KiwiSavers, our investments can often have this international exposure, but does it change how we handle those things or does it keep rolling?
To be honest, not really. And I think that's the whole point of diversification. Your KiwiSaver funds already hold thousands of companies across dozens of countries. When one region struggles, others often do okay. And that's the cushion. What I do talk about, though, is that emotional side, what we're talking about when headlines are scary, people feel like they should do something. But when you look at the evidence, the investors who do best are the ones who stick to their strategy and keep contributing, not the ones that react to every headline.
And I'll pick up on this as well from the chat as well. You know, you were talking before about the need for a buffer and had a great question come in here about if we're talking sort of 3 to 6 months expenses, are we thinking a savings account, a term deposit, a cash fund? Do you need to think about your emergency fund staying ahead of inflation? That's a good question, right? Because when you've got cash on hand, you're sacrificing a little bit of security, you might not get as many returns, right?
Yeah, you will. And so you want it to be accessible. And yes, great. If it can earn interest, fantastic. If you have a mortgage, often for my clients, the buffer sits against the mortgage and, for example, a revolving credit. So then it's offsetting the interest that they're paying on the mortgage. So, of course, you want to make sure that everything's serving you. But the key with a buffer is that it's accessible. So that's the key that you focus on. And again, that allows you to be braver, to sleep at night and let those longer term investments ride out whatever's happening globally.
Yeah. And there's another question in the chat, which what I want to say is that they're talking about being new to investing and wanting to know some good tactics. This hasn't been announced yet, but heads up, I'm doing another webinar in 2 weeks on just how to get into investing in 2026, what you need to know, good strategies, and we'll be diving into that in really great detail. So I will save this for that conversation, but thank you very much for that conversation and make sure you tune into that because we will be going deep on that one. Jason, I think one of the big things, cost of living, huge talking point throughout 2025. Do you think that'll continue to be a big conversation point 2026?
Absolutely. I mean, all the data and all of the polling points to the fact that cost of living is still up there as the biggest issue that Kiwis think about. I mean, it comes back down to a lot of things. Insurance rates, it comes down to electricity prices, the cost of food. So there are a lot of elements that come that go into the cost of living. So I would be wary of any generic cost of living policies. And I think that seeing more specific things in terms of what the government or what the political parties say that they want to do in specific areas that are particular touching points for New Zealand are the things to keep a close eye on. And it's already started. I mean, the government's in a position where, as the government, it can announce things that kind of almost dress themselves up as an election policy, but not aren't quite exactly that because they're a government and they still have to govern. For example, yesterday when they announced the new energy policy to give the electricity authority some more teeth to go after some of the bigger power companies that may be non-compliant. And I went out to interview Simon Watts, the energy minister, and he was unable to actually say if any of the energy companies had been uncompliant, if what actually the problem was. He was just giving the authority more teeth just in case they were able to do it. And then I talked to PowerSwitch and they said that that's not the problem when it comes to power prices. Everybody knows the problem. It's where it comes down to supply of gas, renewable electricity and things like that. So very much you've got to be able to separate the wood from the trees. Specific things of what specifically are you going to do and what tangible quantifiable outcomes will those policies have?
Right. So there are promises being made on things that might address this, but we're maybe not having as much hope that they will address it quite yet. This is not the silver bullet we were hoping for. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think it takes a multitude of different things. You can't fix New Zealand's cost unaffordability of electricity overnight with one sweep of the wand that gives the electricity authority more powers to fine people. There needs to be a lot of work done in building up our own supply of electricity, for example, and that takes years and years and years. And also, unfortunately for us, it relies on international factors as well. If there is a war in the Middle East that disrupts gas supply, that is going to be reflected in our prices. And the government, unfortunately for them, unfortunately for their opponents who might want to say otherwise, can't do anything about these wars around the world. New Zealand is not going to come in with its boots on the ground and say, Jason Walls from Mount Albert is facing a high power price. I'm here to help him. It's just simply not going to happen. So there are a lot of promises that will be made. It's really about really tapping into tangibly what can be done.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say as well, someone in the chat here has asked about gold, which has been going up. Is it likely to burst? I will say silver as well has been going great guns. That is something that is hard for me to answer quickly in this chat. But the good news is I've got a deep dive coming on that in, I think it's 2.5 weeks, if I remember my schedule properly. So stay tuned for that. We're doing a real deep dive on precious metals, what's happening there and what we think is coming next. So stay tuned. Jason, I think what you're saying there about, you know, the politicians really want to be seen acting on this and good. Are there areas where you think we might see further push? And are there any areas where our politicians have shown absolutely no appetite for stepping in there, and maybe you're a bit on your own to fix that one?
Yeah, I think that probably the retirement age is a really interesting one to touch on here, because there is political ambition across New Zealand's parliament. The Nats want to increase the retirement age. Labour have in the past, they've talked about it, and then they floated with not doing it. It's unclear where they are at the moment, but you've got the Greens and other parties as well. It's all irrelevant because of New Zealand First. New Zealand First, we know, don't want the retirement age to go up. Their constituents, their voter bases tend to be senior New Zealanders. And they have Winston Peters, who will get more bang for their buck when it comes to voting for him than almost any other party. History shows us that. You've got the Provincial Growth Fund, various different things that Winston Peters has been able to get in coalition arrangements. He's sitting at about 7, 8, 9% in the polls right now. Either side, left or right, National and ACT and Labour and the Greens, they need New Zealand First to form a government. If you know the linchpin in everything does not want to move the retirement age, it's not going to happen. So I think these various different political parties may have a retirement policy, but Winston is not going to have a bar of it if it's putting up the retirement age.
And can I say something to that point? And it really does make me think, control the controllables. The retirement age, there's nothing surer. It's going to go up. It's just when. We can't control any of that. We really can't. So what we can control is making sure that we take action now, we grow wealth ourselves. And then again, we're not so exposed or scared when we hear these things.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Katie. And I think what we'll do is we're running towards the end of time, but we will whip through to see what are sort of the big underlying trends. I'll whip around all of you on this. What is one big underlying trend or signal that you'll be keeping an eye on this year in order to give you a read on how the money world is going? I'll start with you, Katie.
I think I'll be watching wage growth versus inflation, kind of that real wage trend, because that tells me whether Kiwi's financial breathing room is expanding or contracting, because all the investing advice in the world doesn't matter if people can't afford to save in the first place. So again, control the controllables.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Vanessa, your thoughts?
Mine would be the unemployment rate, because I think, again, once whether that's directly impacting on you or you just know about it, because Kiwis get a bit nervous when they're like, well, it's still at 5.x% and that's making me nervous. And hey, if I'm going to make a if I'm going to change my house or change my job, maybe I won't, if there's a bit less uncertainty there. So mine will be the unemployment rate.
Yeah. All right. What about you, Jason?
Definitely Reserve Bank commentary. We know where interest rates are at the moment. We know what their forward guidance is. It's about what the Reserve Bank says is coming up next. Always keeping an eye on what's coming up next, the next meeting. Anything that they say in between. The new governor has been quite clear that she wants to open things up to be quite transparent. So we might get a lot more information and in terms of which way the governor is looking, which way the members of the Reserve Bank are looking as well, because she's making positive noises around making that Reserve Bank Monetary Policy Board, who actually decide the OCR, accountable for the decisions that they make by actually listing what their vote was and making them a little bit more outspoken when it comes to giving speeches. So keeping an eye, a very close eye on what the governor and the members of her board are saying.
That's such a glorious journalist response, because I very much do the same thing every time there's an OCR announcement. I mean, yes, the headline interest rate number is interesting and gives you, you know, what's going on right now. I always think what's far more interesting, and for the nerds amongst us, this is put out publicly, you can do this too, is looking at the statement that they release at the same time that tells you what they based that on and what they think is coming next. That's so much more interesting to me. I mean,
big time.
What about in terms of a signal that gets overhyped? Is there anything that you won't be paying attention to, or at least you won't make financial decisions based off it? And I'll go the other way around this time. Jason, let's start with you.
Oh, no. I was hoping you'd start with me last so I could have some time to think. Things that I will not be looking at. It's a tough one, because I think that there is a lot of noise out there. I think probably, and it's going to sound a little bit contrived, but political party promises that you just know are going to go absolutely nowhere. I'm somebody that a political party that promises something like, not naming names, but one of them was talking about a capital gains tax that was going to raise $200 billion a year. Absolute nonsense. There's just not that much money floating around in New Zealand. So I won't be paying attention to rhetoric that is a little bit more hyperbolic, let's say, when it comes to political promises.
They do love a bit of hyperbole in an election year. All right. Vanessa, what about you?
I'm going to flip this on your head just a little bit and saying that if I am looking to, or someone else is looking to purchase property this year, I'm actually not going to worry about the OCR. I just want to make the decision. I want to get it done, because as Katie said earlier, and I so believe in this, is that if you are waiting for the perfect market, you'll never find it. You'll only see that in retrospect. So I'm not, if property is on my to-do list for 2026, I'm not going to be focusing on the OCR and waiting for that to make my decision. I'm going to get out and do it before the market moves.
I love that. For those who are listening to the audio version of this rather than the video, Katie was stoked by that response. She's like,
oh, so good. Yeah, absolutely. Because the way that you insulate yourself from being so worried about the OCR is to have a great strategy to pay off any debt that you have.
Yeah.
And then again, you're not so invested. And again, controlling the controllables. So yes, I applaud you. I agree. Take action. Be brave. And for me, I think the signal that gets totally overhyped is any predictions. You know, predicting the market will do X, prices will be Y. I just think they're horoscopes for your money. No one consistently predicts short-term movements. What matters again and again is, and I think we're all singing from the same hymn sheet, having a strategy that works across different scenarios, not trying to guess which scenario will play out.
Yeah, exactly. This is why I always say in my investing strategy is based on the idea that things will happen that I did not see coming. And I have planned for that from the get-go, so that if it all does go a bit topsy-turvy and I'm feeling, well, you know, I just ignore it. I let the auto payments do their thing, because it was all set up with that in mind in the first place. And I think that is a really key thing for not just your money, but your mental health. My goodness. I don't want my money keeping me up at night. I've got far too many other things that can do that.
Life is short. Live your best life.
Right? My kid's going through a night terrors phase. I'm dealing with that. I'm not staying awake for anything else. I know, it's not fun. It's not great. All right. If everyone was doing, if we sort of think of like the average person, create a little avatar in your head of the average New Zealander. And if they were going to make just one money change in January to set themselves up for the year ahead, what do you think it should be and why? Vanessa, start with you.
Okay, this is again, I'm just going to flip it on its head a little bit, but I would think about how you can get yourself more confident to make that decision. Because I go back to what Katie said earlier, is that if you've been thinking about stuff for a long time, then actually it doesn't matter what you do with your money. You need to wake up every morning, look in the mirror and go, I'm going to do what? I'm going to invest. I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to. You need to believe in yourself. So if you've been talking about something for a very long time and haven't made the decision yet, decision paralysis will get you nowhere. So work out what you can do to build yourself that confidence to be able to make some changes this year, whatever that money change is. But start with that. You need that confidence to make that change.
Yes, I love that. Confidence is really key. It does keep you stable. Jason, what about you? If just one thing to set you up for the year ahead, what do you reckon?
Negotiate every single thing that you pay money for, whether it be your rent, if that's coming up to renewal. It's a great time as a dirty landlord myself. If my tenant was to say, we want a lower rent, you've been a great tenant for a year. The market is really dry. You've forced my hand here a little bit. Negotiate with your power companies. Negotiate with everybody that you pay money to that has a phone number that you can call. Because if you don't do it, you're going to get zero. But if you do try, at least you might get something. Something, my mom always tells me off, it's something instead of something. But negotiate on absolutely everything.
Got to keep your mom happy, Jason.
Always. Yeah.
I do that too, Jason.
I also remember at the beginning of my broadcasting career, I got told off for saying says instead of says.
Says.
It is says.
Z. Says.
And on that tip of negotiating, you are speaking my language there. Hard agree, because you can say, I did one, an episode. Oh, weeks ago now, potentially months, but I just ran some numbers on just a few categories, not even everything you could negotiate. And I crunched the numbers and it was over 200K that you could save if you negotiated just some key categories. It's really, really worth it. Someone else in the chat saying, any tips for negotiating a better salary? Well, I actually have some plans on episodes doing a deep dive on that, but my biggest tip for right now to tide you over is always have a wins folder ready to go, where you things that you have achieved that your boss enjoyed, you know, things that got the company ahead. Getting extra money in the door is always a really easy one. They love that. But just any win that has made your employer's life better, have that ready to go when you go into that chat about, I'd like to talk to you about my salary. Have that stuff ready. Katie, if the average person made one money change to set themselves up for the year ahead, what would you like it to be?
I would love you to automate one savings goal. It could be emergency fund, debt repayment, house deposit, whatever matters most to you. Set up an automatic transfer on payday and watch it build and don't think about it. And because that's the thing, and I love what Vanessa said, it's action builds confidence. So automate one goal.
Yes. Absolutely. And automation, we've seen this happen. I think KiwiSaver has been around long enough now that we have seen the power of small and regular in action. Now, the number of people who've said, my KiwiSaver built up so much faster than I thought. Apply that to the other areas of your life. You know, save $20 on your power bill and put that to work in your KiwiSaver or your investments or your savings. Automate everything you can. Lock in those things so that they just keep happening in the background without you thinking about it. Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, that is all we have time for. Thank you all so much for coming on, sharing your wisdom with us. Katie Wesney from EnableMe, Vanessa Williams from realestate.co.nz, Jason Walls, TVNZ business reporter. You have shared so many brilliant tips, tricks, insights with us. Really, really appreciate it. And of course, thank you to you for tuning in, listening, giving us great questions. Even if I didn't get to your question today, I have noted them all down and I will do deep dives on them in upcoming episodes wherever I can, because if I know what's on top of your mind, then I can make sure we are getting those questions answered. So don't forget to subscribe to Making Sense wherever you're listening, whether it's YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever. Make sure you've got that so that you get those questions answered in the future as well. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.